Okay, so a fascinating topic today, I think, not just for me, for everybody, and that is the development of the sale of chametz. It's fascinating to me for three reasons. One is we don't get a chance that often to actually look and trace how a halacha develops over time. This is a really easy one to do. The second is, in the discussion of, does halacha change? Halacha doesn't change, but facts change, and it's obviously the case that halacha develops. And this is a great example, mostly because there's a moment in time that everybody agrees something big just happened, and it changes the way we go about mechiras chametz. The third part that I think is fascinating, and you may enjoy less, is when you see how it developed. You get a sense for perhaps, the dangers in things developing and things expanding too far, and chumros becoming kulos and kulos becoming chumros. And this is another great example of being able to look from above at a halacha developing and asking ourselves, has it developed too far? Is it time for us to rein it back? Okay, so I'll present it this way. There are basically three major stages to the idea of Mechiras Chametz. Okay, let's start at the beginning. No, but Moshe Rabbeinu didn't sell his Chametz. It doesn't exist in the Torah. There was nothing like this. There's just an Isser Bal Yiroh Bal Yimatzeh. You're not allowed to have Chametz on Pesach. Now, are you allowed to sell Chametz? So the answer is, well, of course you're allowed to sell chametz. You're allowed to sell chametz all year long. If you own a supermarket, if you own a makolet, of course you're allowed to sell chametz. And it's interesting, but the Mishnah actually starts there. So on the sheet in the first Mishnah, the Mishnah says as follows: Kol sha'a she'mutar la'echol, so long as you're allowed to eat chametz, ma'achil lebehema lechaya v'la'ofot. You can feed it to your animals. And now the one we want, umocher l'nachri. You're allowed to sell it to a guy. Umoter bahana, and then avar zmano, when the iser chametz comes into effect, then obviously you can't sell, you can't do anything with it. So, the Mishnah says something that seems so obvious to us, right? Can you sell chametz to a guy today? Well, of course you can. Can you sell chametz to a guy the week before Pesach? Of course you can. So can you sell chametz to a guy on Erev Pesach? Of course you can. And it's so obvious that the Gemara in source number two, Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, on that same daf in Pesachim, says as follows: Umachrol and Achri Pshita. Of course you could sell chametz to a guy. So the Gemara says no, it's telling us something else. La'afuke mehay tana. It's telling us that we don't paskin like a particular Tana. The Tanya, the Brisa says, Beis Shammai Omrim, Lo Yimkor Adam Chemtzo L'Nachri. Beis Shammai says, you're not allowed to sell your chametz to a guy. Ela Im Kein Yodea Bo, Sheyichle Kodem Pesach. Unless you know that the chametz you sold to a guy will be consumed before Pesach starts, before the Zman Iser Chametz starts. Ubeis Hillel Omrim, no, Kol Sha'a She'Mutar La'Echol Mutar Limkor. That's the Mishnah we saw. Beis Hillel says, if you're allowed to eat Chametz, well, of course you're allowed to sell Chametz. So the question is really, what's the Shita of Beis Shammai? What in the world could be the problem with selling Chametz? So Rashi explains, you have to sell it Kodem She'Yavo Pesach, because they have to the guy has to consume the chametz before Pesach comes to Kasavri, because Beis Shammai holds mitzvah alav leva'aro min ha'olam velo shiyehe kayam. Beis Shammai says there's a mitzvah to get rid of chametz before Pesach starts. So just for a second, because it's fascinating and it's not something we would normally think. Let's say you own Costco. I know you have to start worrying on Hanukkah time, according to Beis Shammai, that you'll be selling chametz to a guy and the guy might keep it. The answer is almost for sure not. This is almost certainly a din that applies within 30 days of Pesach. The halacha of Shoalim V'Dorshim B'Hilchos HaChag Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag means there's a point in time in where you're supposed to become aware of the fact that the Isser Chametz is approaching. And that works out conveniently to be, you know, sort of the day after Purim, right? But people who start worrying about Chametz on, I don't know, on Tu B'Shvat, you know, I think they're doing it too soon. Okay, that's a traditional machlokas between husbands and wives, I think. But the bottom line is, Beis Sham has this weird shita that says, no, if you own chametz, Erev Pesach, let's say Erev Pesach, but maybe even within 30 days of Pesach, you have to make sure that that chametz is not existing in the world once Pesach starts. Okay, that's a strange shita, but we don't paskin like that. We paskin like Beis Hillel. There's absolutely nothing wrong with selling chametz Erev Pesach. So great. So the shear's over, right? It's clear we're allowed to sell our chametz. Well, of course not, right? What's different? Why is this Mishnah not a source for our minhag of selling chametz? So the answer is because this Mishnah is talking about a real sale, right? You own a supermarket. A guy comes in. You sell him a loaf of bread. That's it. It's a real sale. He pays you money. You give it to him. You never see it again. You're not expecting to get it back. So, yes, it's true. The Mishnah says you're allowed to sell chametz, but it's hard to argue that Mishnah serves as a source for what we do. Because obviously, we're not using an outright sale when we sell chametz. Okay, but no fears. If it's not a Mishnah, it might be a Tosefta, source number three, right? Tosefta, again, written in the time of the Mishnah. Tosefta are sort of like, you know, minor league Mishnayos written by Tanaim. So you're still talking about, I don't know, the 300s, let's say. And the Tosefta tells a story in source number three. Perek bet alacha, you'd bet a psach, and the Tosefta says, Yisrael v'goy shehayu bain b'sfina. Right? Sounds like the beginning of a joke. A Jew and a Gentile were on a boat. Right, and then the Lubavitcher Rebbe, okay, fine. So they're both on a boat. V'chametz b'yad Yisrael. And wouldn't you know it, it's about to be Pesach, and the Jew, who presumably thought he'd get home for Pesach, but he's stuck on a boat, he has very valuable chametz with him. Says the Tosefta, Hareze mochro l'nachri, v'not no, or onot no b'matana. You're allowed to sell it. The Tosefta says you're allowed to sell it to a guy or give it to him in an outright gift. And the Tosefta even finishes it. V'chozer v'lokeach mimenu la'achar ha-Pesach. And you can take it back from the Gentile after Pesach is over. U'bilvad sheyitno lo b'matana gimura. On condition that when you transfer the chametz to the guy, it is an outright transfer. Okay, no conditions, no tricks. You have to absolutely sell it or absolutely give it to him without any conditions attached. And then, if you're lucky, presumably, after Pesach, he'll sell it back to you or he'll give it back to you. Okay. Now, this seems to be perfect. Now we have a Tosefta that seems to support what we do. The answer is not so quickly. A number of things to notice about the Tosefta, and you know, later posts can point this out. The first is, why do you think the Tosefta tells us the story? Yisrael v'goy shayu boin bisfina. Right? It once happened that there was a Jew and a guy on a boat. So most people understand that what the Tosefta is telling us is, it's b'di'eved, right? This isn't how you should plan to get rid of your chametz. If it once happened that a Jew was on a boat before Pesach and he had tons of valuable chametz, okay, so we allowed him to sell it. But it may not be that heter is available to people who are just, you know, living in their homes in Teaneck or in Efrat or what have you. That's the first point to make. The second is the understanding of the Tosefta is that it really is an outright sale to the extent vinotno b'matana, the understanding is that you actually transfer physical possession of the chametz to the Gentile, which is indicative of a real sale. It's not usual to sell something and retain physical possession of it. So the Tosefta seems, one second, let me just finish and then you'll go. So the Tosefta seems to imply that you could do it, but you can't retain possession. You have to actually give it to the person, give physical possession, and even though you expect to get it back after Pesach, the Tosefta is clear that that expectation exists. The answer is he, the Gentile, is under no obligation to return it whatsoever. He has physical possession. He could eat it during Pesach. He could do what he wants. You're at his mercy. Yes, question.
So I don't see the physical possession issue that you're raising here. In the case of a ship, presumably the chametz is in the hold and never moves, and the only thing that changes is the ownership.
Okay, so first of all, again, I know how people understand the Tosefta, and because I prepared, I have more sources to kind of prove that that's the understanding. It's true. It doesn't say it as clearly as I present it. The way I imagine it, he's on the Lido deck and the other guy's on the Aloha deck, and they move it from one to the other. I really don't know what the boat looks like, right? The only boat I really know is the Love Boat. So it's hard to know exactly. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's in the hold. But again, you watch what happens. And here's something worth noting. There's 1,000 years of complete silence on this issue in halacha. Pretty much, nothing really happens from the time of this Tosefta, from the Mishnah and the Tosefta, till quite a while later. And, let's just point out the obvious now, because it's important for the conversation. There wasn't, selling chametz wasn't something that came about very often. And it's not because people were frumer than we are. It's because people were poorer than we are. But most importantly, it's because chametz didn't really exist. There were no processed foods, right? There were no, most people didn't have refrigerators and freezers. People didn't have pantries, right? My great-grandfather, I assume, never sold chametz. Why? Never had chametz, right? You had bread in your house and you finished it every day or every 2 days. And it wasn't that hard to get rid of chametz before Pesach. It just, it's hard to even imagine what chametz the Tosefta is talking about. Again, wheat isn't chametz, grain isn't chametz, and we don't eat it on Pesach. But there's just, in the old days, there just wasn't much going on. There was no reason to sell chametz. There was no need to sell chametz. And so, the Mishnah, the Tosefta, it sort of sat there. We skip then to source number 4, to the Beis Yosef. Now we're in the 1500s already. The Beis Yosef, 1500s in Tzfat. And here's why I'm pretty sure that my reading of the Tosefta is correct, although, happy to be challenged. Here's the Beis Yosef. He says, V'kosuv b'trumas ha'deshen, Simon Kovchav, he calls it trumas ha'deshen, maybe let's say 1200s, who says, Mi sheyesh biyado inyane chametz, v'rotze letitam legoy chutz labayit. Okay, those two words clue me into the fact that the assumption all along, from the time of the Tosefta to the Beis Yosef, is that if for some reason you had a need to sell chametz, you could, on the following two conditions. One, chutz labayit, physical possession of the chametz had to be transferred. And two, bimatana gemura, outright gift. He doesn't say, but also obviously it could be a sale. But the point is it's unconditional and you bear the risk. Okay, you're giving away your chametz. it's being transferred from your possession to the possession of the guy, and you're at his mercy. Now, who was the guy? So the Beis Yosef makes clear, it's okay. The guy was your friend. Va'oto guy ha'Yisrael makiro. You didn't just find a guy someplace. He's your neighbor. V'yodeya bo shelo yiga bahem ha'goy klal. Right? It couldn't be any clearer. The Beis Yosef says, it's what we call a ha'arama. It's understood that you expect to get the chametz back after Pesach. The guy understands it also. Ela yishmureim lo ad la'achar ha'Pesach v'yachzor v'yitneim lo. So what do we think about this? So it's a funny language. The Beis Yosef says, yeira'eh deshari. He doesn't sound thrilled. He says, it appears to me that this is mutter. Rak sheyitneim lo b'matana gimura, so long as it's an outright sale. It can't be conditional in any way. B'li shum tanai, right? No condition. Oshim kareim lo mechira gimura b'davar muat. Or you could sell it to him with an outright sale, even if he just pays you a down payment and he'll pay the rest after Pesach. Okay, so here we find, you know, a codification by the Beis Yosef of what seems to have been the minhag for the hundreds of years beforehand. Let's say the minhag from 1200 to the mid-1500s was, it was rare, I assume, but if you had valuable chametz and you didn't want to throw it out and you didn't want to burn it, you went to your Gentile neighbor, or I guess in Tzfat, you went to your Arab neighbor, who you were friends with, and you gave him, you physically gave him the chametz, and he paid you, or he took it unconditionally. Yes, of course, it was the case that he knew you expected to get it back after Pesach, but if he did not give it back to you, you had no claim. So legally and physically, it was an absolute transfer, so it was mutter. The Beis Yosef, a few years later, grew up to be the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5, and he did not change his mind. Again, he says, "V'im machra'o nitano la'ino Yehudi." Again, "Shem michutz labayit," outside of your house, kodem haPesach, afal pisha Yisrael mecharo la'ino Yehudi v'yodeh bo shelo yiga. Even though you know that that's what's going to happen, he's going to give back to you. Now he says, "Mutar." I just want to point out, I think it's interesting, although I'm not sure how valuable it is. In the Beis Yosef, he said, Ye ra'ed dishari. Like the sense was, I'd probably feel better if you didn't do it, but it seems to be that it's mutter. In the Shulchan Aruch, he actually uses the word mutter, so long as it's an outright, absolute, unconditional transfer. Okay? So more or less, this was not any form of advancement in the halacha. This is just a codification of what the minhag had been. The minhag had been, and again, my understanding is it was pretty rare, just because the average person in Tzfat had nothing to sell. Okay, but if you did, and you wanted to, the Shulchan Aruch paskens that it's okay, you know, on the conditions we discussed. Again, physical transfer, an absolute legal transfer in an unconditional way. And that's where the world sat, and that's where the halacha sat. I give you the history, until the Bach. Rav Yoel Sirkis, he basically was the successor to the Mechaber, but to the Ramah. He lived in Krakow. In fact, if you ever go to visit the Ramah's Kever in Krakow, he's buried near the Ramah. Okay, and he wrote the Bach on the tour. And he, again, so somewhere, I can't date his piece, but probably it's in the early 1600s, right? He died in 1640. He was the Rav Rashi and the Posek. And he has a very, very honest piece where he tells you exactly what's going on. Source number 6. And this is the moment where Mechiras Chametz changed. Okay, here we go. Source number 6. Says the Bach, I got to tell you what's going on where I live in Krakow in the 1600s. Ubimindinazo. Sherov Masa Umatan Hu Bi Yain Saraf. Anybody know what Yain Saraf is? schnapps, whiskey.
Yeah. It burns.
Whiskey, good. He says most of my balabatim, you know, they deal in beer and whiskey. The efshar lahem lemachram legay michutz labayit. He said, you know, these people owned a distillery. They owned a warehouse. They couldn't just, you know, carry the box of chametz to their neighbor. Bifrat lemachazikim beordina. Ordina is like an ordinance, meaning you probably needed a governmental license to sell whiskey. And so it wasn't such an easy thing to transfer. So the Bach tells you the truth, right? The world just changed. We now have a need in halacha for helping people who's, you know, let's be honest, it's not a bit of their fortune, it's their entire fortune, right? It's like if you were a bank, well, you know, your cash is your merchandise. If you sold whiskey, okay, so what are you going to do? So watch this. So the Bach says very openly and honestly, Yesh lahatir b'inyan zeh sheyimkor ligoy kol hachametz shebecheder v'gam hacheder atzmo yimkor ligoy. So it's genius. Watch what the Bahag did. I'm sorry, the Bach. The Bach did not change the halacha at all. The halacha as codified had been, if you have physical transference of the chametz in an unconditional sale or gift, you can do it. All the Bach did, which changed everything, was say, well, we can't actually transfer the physical chametz to the guy because there's too much of it. What we could do is transfer the warehouse to the guy. We can sell him the distillery. We can sell him the warehouse. And now we are complying 100% with the halacha. All the Bach did was figure out a way to change the facts. He didn't change the halacha. He changed the facts. Now, he continues, and it's worth reading because he understands that he's being revolutionary here. And I think if he wasn't the Bach, people wouldn't have agreed to it, but he was. Umiyu, he says, you know, you can't play games with this. Sarich limsor ligoy gam hamafteach. And by the way, in those days, I don't think, you know, there were 50 keys. The way I imagine it is like the big key that you have to carry in two hands, like Herman Munster had to his house or something, right? This is the key. De imlo kein, if you don't give him the key, says, kevan de das Yisrael lachzor v'liknot chametz ze'achar ha-pesach. He says it's clear, right? The guy intends to repurchase all the liquor after Pesach. If you don't give him the key, havale kimaschir beito ugmaro pisuk adamim. He says basically, if you don't give him the key, the whole thing is a joke. And it's as if you don't have, it's as if you have responsibility for it and not the guy. And it wouldn't work. Velo dami limisha kanaba echad midakeh knaot v'nishar mafteach biyad amocher. He says, and it's not. Look, in halacha, transference of the key is meaningless, right? That's not part of a halachic kinyan. So says the Bach, don't tell me I don't have to give him the key because you can make a real kinyan without giving the key. The Bach says, I'm only going to make it up to a point, but now I'm going to draw the line. De bechametz yesh lahachmir. This is here, we're dealing with, you know, with a harama for an isur d'oraisa. Visu, more than that, he says, Kevon shehamafteach biyad Yisrael viyachol likanes lecheder v'litol hachametz misham. He says, and if the only key remains in the hand of the Jew, and the Jew could come in whenever he wants over Pesach and take it, he says, lo samcha daita degoy demechira gmurahi. Even the guy realizes it's not serious if he doesn't have the key. Ela sover de'ena mechira. The guy will understand. It's just a joke. You're trying to get out of the Isser Chametz. Now that's a great line. Ubilvad shelo ya'arim means on condition that it's not, you know, a tricky kinyan. But of course it's a tricky kinyan. But says the Bach, if I'm going to allow you to do this, you got to be incredibly strict about the rules. Okay, so let's just review, because this is the moment. The Bach says, till now, we only allowed the sale of chametz with a physical transference. Now we've bumped into a situation where we really need to deal with it because it's a person's livelihood at stake and there's no way he could transfer it. So instead he says, sell the chametz and sell the warehouse with it. But if you're going to do that, he says, you know, you got to cross all the T's and dot all the I's. There's no cheating. The guy has to have absolute, you know, access. And my feeling is that he has to be the only person with access to the warehouse. It has to be completely unconditional and you have to take the risk. And there are stories, I don't know if they're true or not, but there are stories, you know, of the guy not selling it back. You know, you're talking about substantial amounts of money. But again, the greatness of the Bach is that he was able to halachically accommodate the people who needed it without changing the halacha. It's a revolutionary psak. But when you look at it, and this is really how halacha develops. When you look at it, he changed the facts. He did not change the halacha. Of course, it led to, you know, this is the moment that led to everything that we have. Okay. One of the things to point out is it's still not widespread, right? If you were in the business, okay, so you could do it. But it was still a sale from one Jew to, in this case, one Pole, I assume, right? It wasn't done on a community-wide basis. It wasn't like everybody was involved in it, okay? This is where we are in the 1600s. Now, just because it's fantastic, let's look at something. It's quoted by the Chassam Sofer, who, if you look in the English where my cursor is, you know, was in Frankfurt on Main. Jackie would have known him, the other Jackie, or the first Jackie, depending on who you are, okay? You know, lived to 1840, 1839. So you're talking about now something he wrote in the 1800s, okay? It's 150 years after the Bach. Not that much had changed. Again, there's still no widespread demand for sales of chametz, but here they had another question in Germany. This is what came up. Source number 7. He says, Vihine. Bihiyot adayin hagon Moreno Rav Baruch Frankel Zatzal Av Bezdin Dekila Kedosh of Leipnik Bechayim. Okay, he says the Rav Rashi before me was somebody named Rav Baruch Frankel. This is the Chassam Sofer talking. Ira ma'aseh. Listen to this. He says it happened. What happened? Shehilshinu malshinim Eitzel Sareha Medina Demerin. Okay, these tattletales, these troublemakers, went to the government of Marin, and they told them as follows: "She Yehudim mochrim chemtzam bishtarot mibli shtempel." The Jews were selling their chametz without what we'll translate as paying the stamp tax, without the shtempel, the chotam of the kira, of the Kaiser. Okay, Jews being accused of tax evasion. Sadly, I bet this was not the first time. We know it's not the last, but okay.
There was no Kaiser at that time yet. It was before the reunification of Germany.
Let me go to Kaiser, because otherwise I don't know what Kira means. It's some kind of governmental official, and he's the hero of the story. So cut me some slack, okay? Okay, so let's say it's the young Israel of Marin, of Leipnik, okay? And these people are selling their chametz, and they're not paying the tax. U'kisheba hadavar lifnei hachassid, the Kaiser. By the way, if you're a careful reader of these things, when they call you the chassid, it's going to work out okay. Because they don't call you the chassid for nothing. So they went to, the president, whoever. Amar, he said, Hadavar yadua she'ein ze masa umatan shel tagar. It's not a real sale, he said. Ela inyan dat religion. It's some kind of, you know, religious ceremony that they go through. Al kain, he said, they're not evading taxes. Ein ze b'chiyuv shtempel. They don't have to pay the stamp tax because it's not a real sale. That's great. The Jews don't have to pay taxes. Uh-oh, that's not so great. Va'al yidei zeh nolad k'tzat safek b'lev ha'gaon zatzal. He said, so Rav Baruch Frankl became terrified. Why? De mashma de medina de malchusa posul hashtar hahu. Because it sounds like in Germany, the sale would not be recognized. Now, this raises really one, to this day, a fascinating question, which is, do we want the sale recognized under civil law? Or is it sufficient for the sale to be recognized under halacha? Okay, so first of all, the Chassam Sofer is not worried. He says, Ulevavi lo kein yidmeh. I'm not worried, says the Chassam Sofer, which of course saved the day because he was the Chassam Sofer, right? The unquestioned gadol at the time. Why? He says, Ki hashtar kosher, hein bidin Yisrael. First of all, obviously the shtar selling the chametz is enforceable under halacha. And also, im ba hagoy lehotzi mekcho b'dayanim, hareyu shelo, hein bidin umot ha'olam. He says it's enforceable under German law as well. How does he know? He says as follows. Ela she'az kiyishit kishayit ve'enu bidin umot ha'olam, Tzarich l'shalem t'chila hashtempel. He says, no, they didn't say it's an unenforceable sale. All they said was, so long as you're just doing it to get out of the Isser Chametz, you don't have to pay the stamp tax. But if the guy decided after Pesach to keep the Chametz, to keep the liquor, then of course he'd have to pay. That's the Chiddush of the Chassam Sofer. So that's how he got out of the problem. And he says again, Achakira bechasto v'yashru noto. This is the greatest guy ever, you know. He was so fair and so straight with us. Amar she'al kiyotze b'zeh lo hitil olash temple. No, you don't have to pay stamp taxes on a formalistic sale. Kevan she'ein tam hakoneh u'mocher l'derech tagarim. It's not a real sale. Ela lahavkia me'isur chametz. Va'al kazeh lo hitil ol mas hashtemple. Okay, so the Chassam Sofer saves the day, right? He says two things. First of all, the sale is enforceable under German law. I'm sorry, under halacha. Second of all, he claims, the sale is also enforceable under German law. Why don't you have to pay the stamp tax? So he says you only have to pay the stamp tax when it turns into a real sale. But that doesn't unwind, you know, that which we've done beforehand, which is a formalistic sale, which gets us out of the problem of owning chametz on Pesach.
It's an installment sale. The tax is not due till the consideration is paid.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we're saved. And then you go just another, although this raised the question again of, you know, whose law does it have to be enforceable against? So this raises the question also, like, what language to write the shtar? Source number 8 is the Divrei Chaim, the Tzanzer in the 1800s, I assume. He says, "Ubal korchach tzrichim anu lezed de lo mahani shum shtar ba'olam b'zeh b'dinehem d'chok gazar etzlam d'mechira kazo shenaseh lafkia iser eino mechira klal." Says the Divrei Chaim, stop trying to make it enforceable under secular law. It's not. It never had to be. It never was going to be. It's a formalistic stale. Umishim hachi ein tzarech shtempel. He knows the tshuva that came before him. V'chol ha'arkaos lo yechazko ha'mechira zo yish'al no malat kvot tarato v'yeda. Ki kein hu. He says no secular court's going to uphold the sale. V'im kein mahu mechirateinu im eino mo'il b'dinehem. So how's it going to help us? He says, ela vadai de'ein lanu rak din she'paska lanu ha'torah. The iser chametz is a din Torah. The sale of the chametz is to be mafkia din Torah, and that has to be done under halacha. V'lachein ein chiluk klal bein im nichta v'lashon Ashkenaz or v'lashon Hakodesh. He answered the question. The question he was asked was, what language should we write the sale document in? Should we write it in German, or should we write it in Hebrew? And he said it doesn't matter, because the fact of the matter is that it only has to be enforceable la halacha and not under civil law. That's an easily challengeable conclusion. because presumably if it's not enforceable under civil law, then the guy has, you know, obviously the guy knows it's not a real sale. But it seems to me that the original condition was if the guy wanted to keep it, he could. And I would assume that that would require enforceability in a secular court. And I do think that in America, there's an effort to make it both a halachic sale and enforceable under secular law, because otherwise, you know, you're kind of stuck. Okay. So we are where we are at this point in history. We're in the early, we're in the 1800s. You know, my assumption is very few people are taking advantage of this kula. Okay, there are people with beer businesses and whiskey businesses and what have you, but the sale was not institutionalized. Meaning, okay, a person who had chametz went to his neighbor who was a guy and drew up a contract and sold. And, you know, there weren't that many people doing this. Okay, but at some point in the 1800s, probably by the mid-1800s, there was a movement to start institutionalizing the sale of chametz. Why? Because as more people started to do it, it became clear that people didn't really know how to do a halachic sale. It's just, it's not something that we come across very often. And as, you know, processed foods became, and as it became possible to hold on to foods more often, more people were doing it. And so there was a movement to start institutionalizing this. And the movement took two forms. One was actually, you know, all the people transferring their chametz to the bezdin / you know, to the rabbi, and the rabbi then owned it all and sold it. And then there's the form I think that's most prevalent for us, which is no, not selling it to the rabbi, that's not what we do, but we appoint the rabbi as our shliach to conduct the sales. Okay, now let's be clear, there was a lot of opposition to this. What seems obvious to us because we've lived with it our whole lives was not obvious at all. There was a lot of opposition. This looks like a joke. You know, this shouldn't be what we're doing. Now, there's a much bigger point here, which, you know, I'll just say it happens to be the way I see it. I think I'm in the minority on this. But I'll say it this way. I think there is an inviolate rule in halacha, which I'll say as follows. For every chumrah, there is an equal and opposite kula. Okay? Nothing happens, you know, without having an effect on some other. There's no part of halacha that exists on its own. And now I'll tell you what I think. We all live in a world, well, you live in a world, in which if it doesn't say OUP on it, it's chametz. Okay, I'm here to tell you that that is a chumrah that is leading to kulos that are unnecessary. Why? Because when you go to your kitchen and your pantry and whatever else, you go, there's so much stuff here. Of course I have to sell it. I'm not going to throw everything out. But here's the thing nobody told you. It's not true. Okay? Yeah, you're not going to use spices that you use during the year. You'll buy your own cultural Pesach spices. But the spices aren't chametz. 80% of what you have in your pantry is kitnios. Okay, big secret. Even for Ashkenazim, kitnios are not chametz. Okay, we don't eat it. But they're not chametz. They can sit in your closet the whole time. People have very little real chametz. Okay, what do you have that's chametz? Pasta, bread, you know, cookies. With the slightest effort, even now, if you went, you have 2 weeks till Pesach, you could get rid of all of your chametz. There's really no need, you know, for somebody who's, there's really no need to sell a box of Oreos. I'm sorry to say it that way. There's really no need to sell a box of pasta. There's really no need, you're not going to sell bread anyway, because, I mean, what would be the point of selling bread and then eating it, you know, a week later when you take it out of the freezer? all this is a result of the fact that we've been indoctrinated to believe that everything that's not kosher lePesach is chametz and needs to be sold and removed from your houses. It's not true. So I'm not saying not to sell chametz. God forbid. It's not for me to say that. But it doesn't seem to me that there's any reason for anybody, you know, who's not dirt poor. You know, if you're going to Phoenix for Pesach, you could probably give away the half-eaten box of Oreos. That's my guess. Again, I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but it just seems to me that that's a pretty easy thing to do. And you don't even have to do it. Because again, if you have some vague idea that Pesach is coming, so I understand in Israel there's no Costco, so you can't buy, you know, right? If you buy anything from Costco, it takes you a month to finish it, obviously. But it's possible to look at, you know, the chametz that you have and not have months worth of pasta sitting there, you know, in case there's some pandemic or whatever. I don't know.
Liquor is the big one.
Liquor is exactly.
Yep.
Booze. Okay, so it's easy for me. I don't have any liquor. But I'll say this. You're absolutely right. But there's a huge difference between, you know, basically selling everything you have in your house, which I think really undermines the whole idea behind the sale of chametz, and, you know, getting rid of all of your chametz and selling the liquor that you have in one cabinet. I think it's much more likely that that looks like a sale instead of saying, I'm selling all the chametz I have, you know, at 1298 Mercedes Street. Some's in the basement, some's in the kitchen, some's up. It doesn't look like anything real. And my point is, it's wholly unnecessary. All the stuff that we have, 80% of the stuff that we have, we wouldn't eat on Pesach, but it doesn't have to be sold. So great, you could sell it. But the idea that because what I'm frustrated by is because the Mechiras Chametz exists, so people have decided, you know, the mitzvah is to sell chametz, not to get rid of it. It's not true. The mitzvah is to get rid of it. And for the most part, you don't have to throw it out. For the most part, with any level of planning, you can get rid of your chametz before Pesach. Okay, that's my little rant for that. Now, why does the tension exist at all? By the way, I say things like this. This is why I can't be the rabbi of B'nai Sharon. Because you can't say things like this if you're, you know, but no one's being forced to come to this shir. So you have to listen to me. But I'm convinced of my position. And it's so easy. Just when we're finished, everybody go into the kitchen, look in your cabinets. You'll see you don't have that much real chametz. All the other stuff is kitnios. All the other stuff is, you know, okay, you wouldn't eat it. But okay, I'll finish.
Now, what you're saying is all the other stuff, you can throw it out. It doesn't have real value.
No, I'm saying you could sell it. If you want to sell your kitnios, fine.
No, I'm talking about the Cheerios. The Cheerios. Get rid of it.
Yeah, seriously. How many boxes of Cheerios do you have in your kitchen?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what you're saying is the Cheerios, just get rid of it. Don't sell it. Get rid of it.
But I'm saying more than that. Again, I'm not bragging here because Elka's in charge of this. But we won't have two boxes of Cheerios by Erev Pesach. Because this is what we have and we're going to finish it. And then we'll go to the makolet and replenish, you know, a little bit at a time. If you first think of this on Erev Pesach, so of course you have boxes of Cheerios. But if you think about it, you know, the week after Purim, which no one likes to do, but it's helpful. Okay, you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have that many boxes of Cheerios left. And yes, okay, so what's better, selling your half-eaten box of Cheerios or throwing it out? So there's a tshuva. The Tzitz Eliezer basically dealt with this. And this is, of course, the whole tension. Because we are not in favor of Baal Tashlis. It's true, you know. It's easy to say, okay, I'm rich, I'm going to throw things out. But that's also not very halachic. So fascinating. Look at source number 9. Oh, you can't. Okay. Now you can. Here's the tshuva that the Tzitz Eliezer was at. Tzitz Eliezer lived into the 2000s. It's pretty recent. Rav Eliezer Waldenberg.
Yes, he lived into the 2000s.
Okay, so here's the question I asked him. Sheila Shniyai. This rabbi asked Tzitz Eliezer, I have congregants, and they say to me, I have really valuable chametz. He doesn't say liquor. He says, The guy discovered he has a massive amount of breaded schnitzel in his freezer. Okay, so what's the question? Ki michad gisa mishi yirtzel lahachmir v'yizrok et hamotzarim halalu harei lechora yavor alav min hatorah de bal tashchis. Right, or in David's thing, throwing out the Cheerios, isn't that bal tashchis? U'meidach gisa harei sof sof yesh mitzvahs bir chametz. Va'al kein eich yesh linhog b'inyan zeh. This is exactly the question he was asked. Right? On the one hand, you have a mitzvah, you have an isra of Baal Tashchis. On the other hand, you have a mitzvah that looks like it involves Baal Tashchis to some extent. So no one's going to like this, but this is actually, you know, where it more or less comes out. Tshuva. Da'avid kemar avid u da'avid kemar avid. Do what you want. You know, if you do this, you're fine. If you do that, you're fine. V'hamachmir einenu over klal u klal al Baal Tashchis. De'ein kol mitzvah limkor chemtzo. There's no mitzvah of selling your chametz, and throwing it out is not an isur bal tashchis, because it's a mitzvah of bir chametz. U'mekayim eifo ikra d'dina ha-mitzvah saseh d'tashbisu. When you throw it out, it's not an isur, it's a mitzvah. However, v'hamekil gam kein enano over al isur. V'chutz ma sheruba d'ruba d'inchi kebali achaniot v'adomela ha-mochrim b'mechiratam gam chametz b'en. He says, and let's face it, store owners sell real chametz. So, you know, we must believe it. So he basically says, you know, you can do what you want. Although he says someplace else that muvan shemikama b'chinot yoter min ha-hidur hu zeh shemavarem. He says, he thinks probably the better thing to do is to throw it out than to sell it. But again, you know, it's going to be based on the facts. It's going to be based on the circumstances. It's not a one-size-fits-all answer. Okay, so basically what we did was the following. We watched the development of what we all rely on now, the Heter Mechiras Chametz. We saw that the key moment came at the Bach, where the Bach said, if you can't physically transfer the Chametz, you should definitely, you know, you can sell the warehouse and then, you know, give the key and then you get out of the problem that way. Again, whether we got to now where people sell their house, you know, while maintaining the key and locking the door, it's hard to see it. I'll say this. We went to Poland a few years ago. I was with Rav Gigi, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at Gush, and it was the beginning of Nisan, and we were at the Ramah. We went to the Bach's Kever, and I said, oh, we should talk about the Bach. You know, he played a huge role in our preparations for Pesach. And Rav Gigi said what anybody would say. We were right there at the grave. He said, the Bach right now is rolling over at what we did with his kula. You know, he turned like this formalistic thing into something that everybody does now. Okay, anyway, we are where we are. You know, the more careful we could be, the better it would be. But anyway, I thought it was sort of the process and the history was interesting to share and to see what happens sometimes with kulos and chumros. Henry?
Ellie, there's another
question. Wait one second. Henry, could you shut